Welcome to the 27th edition of Dinosaurs, Science, and the Bible with religion professor Dr. John Nay. Dr. John, we were talking last week about post-flood events, and what are we going to talk about? We're going to continue on here this week, aren't we?
Yeah, we're going to continue on, Dave. And last week, we talked about the dating methods very basically and how they work. We talked about carbon-14 dating in particular, just to illustrate the presuppositions of dating methods, things that are assumed to be true, where if in fact they are true, then the conclusion can have some credibility or validity to it. However, often, whether it be in National Geographic, it be Discovery Magazine, it be a science publication, you read that carbon-14 has dated this specimen at this number of millions of years, or potassium-argon has dated this rock at this number of millions of years, but we're not given the things that are assumed to be true for those dates to have credibility to them. I think that's a little misleading, personally. I think they should let us know that carbon-14 has yielded an age of whatever for this particular specimen if the influx of cosmic rays is the same now as it's always been. The production of carbon-14 is the same now as it's always been. The amount of carbon-14 within an organic, something alive, is the same now as it's always been. The decay rate is the same now as it's always been and is accurate. The instruments for measuring the decay of carbon-14 into regular carbon-12 is the same now as it's always been. If they give you all this information, and we understand that that all of these presuppositions are believed to be true. That wasn't a good way to put that. If they are all true, then that date can have some credibility to it. And as mentioned last week, the thing that, of course, really throws the clinker in radiometric dating methods and other dating methods is the global flood. You know, why is that such a tremendous issue today? I mean, why is that scoffed at and mocked at so much by secular education? It would completely throw a clinker into the philosophy of evolution from many implications involved with that, the dating methods, of course, being one. Now, if there, as mentioned, if there had been a global flood of more than a solar year in duration killing all in whose nostrils was the breath of life except those that were on the ark with no one, a representation of the organics that God wanted to preserve on the ark, you know, what should we find around us? As Russ Miller says out of Flagstaff, we should find sedimentary deposition, sedimentary rock a mile deep on a global scale, filled with billions upon billions of dead things at all different elevations, not just in seabed somewhere, but on the highest mountains. And that's exactly what we find. Well, getting back to the topic for this morning a little bit, okay, the carbon-14, one thing I didn't mention last week, whether it be carbon-14, potassium-argon, any of the radiometric dating methods, or others, as we talked about stalagmites and stalactites and the growth rate, the method itself needs to yield relatively consistent results to have validity to it. Well, I have a lot of these, but I have the references for these if some of you listening would like these. The shells of living mollusks, snails, have been dated by carbon-14 at 2,300 years of age.
Oh, that's a lot.
Oh, my word. Yeah, it's an awfully old snail. By the way, this has nothing to do with anything, but you know what the snail said when he wrote on the back of the turtle?
No.
You don't? Huh. Whee! All right, I can't stand it. One more, you know. you know what the snail said when he woke up in the emergency room finally?
Nope.
He had been run over by a turtle.
Said
never saw him coming.
Never. Oh,
okay.
Man.
All right. That's a waste of time. Okay. When you take new wood from actively growing trees and you date that tree at 10,000 years of age. Freshly killed seals, dated at 1,300 years of age, using carbon-14 as the dating method. Then we have, we're talking about these they've just been killed. And then we have mummified seals, dead no longer than 30 years, that was documented, and dated at 4,600 years of age. And there are many of these inconsistencies relative to radiometric dating methods. But what happens is, if the lab comes back with a date that is outside the realm of what is assumed to be in the ballpark, or the window of accuracy, so to speak, that date is thrown out. If it's somewhere close, it's placed as a footnote. And if it's where it's believed to need to be than it's used in the main text. And what I just said, by the way, is if you do a little research on your own, I think you'll find that to be true, and which is exercising a bias, which is misleading and just flat and dishonest. So on the dating methods, we spent in the neighborhood of 6 weeks talking of the length of the creation days from a biblical perspective. And from a biblical perspective, we're talking of an earth somewhere around 6,000 or 7,000 years of age. And if you're just joining us this morning, you may be turning your radio off right now, I know. But we spent 6 weeks on that, and that's from a biblical perspective. And then we spent a couple sessions, maybe three sessions, on support from outside of the Bible relative to age of Earth. And we've been touching on that a little bit with fossils and with petroleum and coal and now with the dating methods. And there, God has given us support beyond all of this even, that the Earth is not 4.5, 4.6 billion years of age. Now, let me ask you a question, Dave. The Earth right now is rotating on its axis. We're about 23.5 degrees relative to the sun, our axis. And we're moving about 1,000 miles an hour just below the equator. Now, we're moving on about 660,000 miles an hour on an elliptical orbit about the sun. Now, the question is this. What would you guess the Earth is doing as far as its rotation on its axis? Speeding up, staying the same, or slowing down?
Slowing down.
Well, you know, I'm not a scientist, and I know you're not a scientist, but what would be some guesses as to why? Why would the Earth be slowing down?
Second law of thermodynamics is my guess.
Boy, throwing out some big words there, Dave. Yes, the second law of thermodynamics is definitely one. Thermo, heat, dynamics, power. And it basically, this law says basically that all physical objects decay and run down. Anytime you exploit matter for energy and you put it to work, something is put to work, there is an amount of that energy that is irretrievable once it's been put to work. We illustrated that by taking you take a log and you burn the log. Well, it put out energy in the form of heat. Well, that heat that was put out is irretrievable. That's a demonstration of the second law of thermodynamics. And the measurement of the energy that has been put to work that's no longer retrievable, the term is entropy, and there's a measurement taken there. So we get back to this, our Earth, the second law of thermodynamics dictates that the Earth is running down, if you will, literally slowing down, and the Earth is. The Earth is slowing down because of its own magnetic field, our relationship with the sun and the moon both, and their magnetic fields, solar drag forces, the second law of thermodynamics you just mentioned, the Earth is slowing down. Now, let's say we would take Earth and move back in time and begin to speed the Earth up. Now, as I start to do this, if you tracked on the last program last week, you may say, well, wait a minute, John, now you're going to talk uniformitarianism. And I thought you spent a whole program to show us that uniformitarianism isn't a good solid base for dating methods. Yes, I don't think it is. I don't think it is, because catastrophes can completely upset the presuppositions of uniformitarianism. Mount St. Helens is a perfect example. You know, if you went to Mount St. Helens right now and you wondered, well, how old is this volcano? And you measure the amount of ash filtering down through the atmosphere and accumulating, and then you measure the accumulation rate of that, and let you stay with a 64th of an inch in 10 years, and then you sunk a shaft down and you tested the depth of the volcanic ash, you're going to come away that this is just millions and millions of years old, when in fact it erupted in 1980 in a tremendously catastrophic event, putting out the equivalent of an Hiroshima-Nagasaki atomic bomb every second for 9 hours. So I believe that God has given us uniformitarianism in the sense that he established basic laws, our laws of physics, the laws are physical laws, and personal opinion, when he intercedes into those physical laws and contradicts them, that's what I personally view as a miracle, something miraculous when the Creator does that, okay? But he's given us these laws, but there are catastrophic events that take place in keeping with the laws, but upsetting the foundation of uniformitarianism. Mount St. Helens would be an example. So why do I go off on that big tangent? Because what I'm going to say right now, give some support to what I'm going to say. If we took the Earth and we moved back in time and we began to speed the Earth up relative to the amount it's slowing down now, If you took this speeding up back just 20 million years ago, which is, from a creation viewpoint, ridiculously long period of time, from an evolution viewpoint, absolutely nothing. Earth is proposed to be 4.5 to 4.6 billion years of age. If you took the Earth back 20 million years, even having an increased magnetic field as you go back, okay, the centrifugal force would literally tear our planet to pieces. Now, this is something that can be measured. You can do some research on your own. The Earth is slowing down.
I guess the evolutionists don't always believe in universalitarianism.
No, I think I have to be cornered somewhere into accepting catastrophes do happen, okay? And they can be very upsetting to things that have been assumed to be true. For example, the influx of cosmic dust into onto our planet now. Now, dust from the cosmos, if you will, dust from outer space is very high in nickel content, and it can be measured, the nickel content of the dust on the Earth that has come into our atmosphere because of our own magnetic field. Well, that dust is minuscule, just about non-existent from an evolution perspective. From a creation viewpoint, there's enough there, if we extrapolate back or we go back and that accumulation thing, of a planet about 6,000 or 7,000 years of age. Now, you're never given anything like that. Since 1836, over 100 different observers at the Royal Greenwich Observatory and the U.S. Naval Observatory have made direct visual measurements which showed that the diameter of our sun is shrinking at the rate of 5 feet per hour. Now, that's pretty rapid. We're about 8,000 miles in diameter, the Earth. The sun about 185,000 miles in diameter. You know, so it's a yellow-sized dwarf. If the sun were hollow, it would take approximately 1 million Earths to fill it. But even as large as that is, 5 feet per hour is fairly significant. Records of solar eclipses imply that this relatively rapid shrinkage has been going on for at least the past 400 years. As far as researchers can tell, this rate has been constant since the original formation of the sun. Using the most conservative data, it would seem that the sun would have had twice its present radius only 100,000 years ago. 20 million years ago, the sun would be touching Earth. Well, actually, it wouldn't be touching Earth because there would be no Earth long before the sun would
be. Something's wrong there.
There's something wrong.
How come that's not in the textbook?
That's it. And the other story has been meticulously filtered out of secular education, which is really sad because it makes so much sense. Meteorites. Meteorites are seldom found in the various strata of the Earth. They're primarily found on the surface of Earth. You know, the meteorites that strike Earth as we go down, whether it be excavating coal or whatever, as we go down in the lithosphere, the crust of the Earth, we should find evidence of meteorites where they've struck the Earth over this 4.5, 4.6 billion years. But the meteorites are found basically on the surface. Another area to touch, sea ooze, if you will. When plants and animals die in the sea, they build up an ooze on the floor of the oceans, and this can be measured. It varies, but builds up at the rate of about 1 inch every 10 years in some places. And you can go to those places, of course, and find out how deep it is. And 1 inch every 5,000 years in others. There's not enough sea ooze on the ocean floor to account for the millions and millions of years. There's only enough to account for a few thousand years. I have a picture here, Dave, that I've had this for quite some time. It's a little difficult to see, I know, but this is in a cave in Queensland, Australia. It's a calcite cave, lots of calcite stalagmites and stalactites and all that, and here's a stalagmite right here coming up from the cave floor. And my question, you know, what does this look like to you over there? That's right over here. You need your bifocals probably.
Is that a person?
Yeah, no, let me get a little closer. He says, right there. Can you see that? Or you need, he has to get his glasses. Speaking of second law of thermodynamics. What's that? Can you see that right there?
A bottle.
That's a bottle. I knew it. I knew it. All that education really came right out there, Dave. That's right. A bottle. And actually, it's a lemonade bottle. It's a lemonade bottle that was left in Limestone Cave in Queensland, Australia. Okay, and it's near as can be found out that lemonade bottle sat there for about 30 years. Well, it has 3 millimeters of calcite. It is encased in calcite now. Now, that's 30 years, not 30 million years. And back to the example in our show last week where I shared this calcite in this water pipe that was taken out of a building where I used to work that was formed in less than 50 years. Now, here's an easy one for you, Dave. You might even not even need your bifocals for this guy. What does this look like to you right here?
A hat.
There we go. I knew I could count on you. Yes, it is a hat, okay? And this is a hat left in a cave in Tasmania. And it's a felt hat. And it looks like it's been felt a lot. It kind of looks kind of worn out. But it has become a hard hat because this hat has completely calcified. It's now calcium carbonate, and it happened in less than 50 years.
A fossil hat.
A fossil hat.
In less than 50 years.
Less than 50
Imagine
years.
Imagine that.
Imagine that. And you don't. We don't have to do a lot of imagining in this case because we can see it. It's empirical, and a case of a soft hat becoming a true hard hat, if you will. But the whole mindset, it takes millions and millions of years to produce fossils. Millions and millions and millions of years for sediment to build up. In the church where I attend, Prescott Valley Christian Church, the person that works with the youth there, I've asked the youth to get these pickle jars. And in the pickle jars, this is a little experiment being done with our youth there, I've asked them to put gravel, put a few rocks, put some gravel in there, put some clay, so we can find some clay, just some old basic dirt, okay, and find some bones somewhere, whether Fifi is passed on or that bird that's really irritating with its squawking, but put a few bones in there, okay, fill it with water, and shake this pickle jar, if you will, and let it set. And I've done this at the college where I taught for a number of years. I asked my students to do this and bring those in at the end of the semester. And what happens is you have stratification takes place, okay? And relative to the geologic time scale, it's instantaneous, you know, but it takes a few weeks. And you'll see this neat stratification take place, where on the bottom you're going to have the heavier rocks there together, an homogeneous layer. And then you'll have a relatively neat layer just up from that, the rocks that are smaller and smaller. They would gradate, if you will, smaller as you move up. And in your layer of clay, et cetera. And you see the stratification taking place very, very, very rapidly. So I'm back again to the global flood and the importance of it and how we see our planet and the age of our planet. So we can take someone goes out here and you look at this hill here and the stratification and you look at that. Boy, it took millions and millions of years for that to happen, laid down very, very gradually. When in fact, the global flood of the Bible is just, relative to what we see, so credible. And of course, if we placed our faith and God's word is inspired, how more credible can you be?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, John, you know, you only mentioned a couple of examples with the snail and the freshly killed seal of how carbon-14 has failed miserably in its diagnosis of an estimation of time that dating it when it fossilized or first formed. But you know, I know that there's many, many others that you could have mentioned. So that's not just if somebody's thinking, oh, that's just a couple of, you know, crazy examples that were, you know, out of the realm of reality, and you know, maybe it happened, maybe it didn't happen, but you know, something could go wrong with anything. But no, that's just a couple that you mentioned. But you know, we can bring in many others, you know, many dozens of others to show that carbon-14 doesn't work.
Yeah, and relative to this thing of uniformitarianism and the assumption the universe is vastly very, very old. Let me read this to you here, Dave. This is really interesting. It is believed that the moon is the same age as the Earth and the rest of the solar system, and the rest of the Earth, 4.5 to 4.6 billion years. R.A. Littleton, a highly respected astronomer and consultant to the U.S. space program, wrote in the mid-1950s, now this is a quote, "The lunar surface is exposed to direct sunlight and strong ultraviolet light and X-rays, which can destroy the surface layers of exposed rock and reduce them to dust at the rate of a few 10,000ths of an inch per year. But even this minute amount could, during the age of the moon, be sufficient to form a layer over it, we're talking about dust now, several miles deep. Now, this isn't from a creationist. This is from R.A. Littleton, an astronomer and consultant to the U.S. space program in the 50s. He goes on. Now, if we were to take a few ten-thousandths of an inch per year to mean 3 or 4 ten-thousandths of an inch per year at the minimum, the moon would have upward to 20 to 60 miles of dust on it. If the moon were really 5 or 10 billion years old, now I'm outside the quote, now I need to make that clear, this isn't Littleton speaking now. If the moon were really 5 or to 10 billion years of age. But the bottom line is, when Apollo 11 landed on the moon, if you can picture that in your mind, and as Armstrong stepped down that ladder, you know, what were the legs like on that Apollo 11 spacecraft, lunar craft?
And there were huge pads on there because they were expecting miles of dust.
Yes, they were expecting that thing to sink. And this was all figured out. I mean, these are brilliant people that work with this. This was all figured out.
There was a real worry that Armstrong would just sink and not be seen again.
Absolutely. And the ladder, if you can picture this in your mind, the ladder did not go all the way down to where the pods were. The pods, the weight of the Apollo 11 with the gravitational field of the moon, all of that had been figured out in minute detail, where this Apollo 11 would set down the pods into the dust and bring that ladder down somewhere close to the surface. When, in fact, when Armstrong got to the bottom of the ladder, he literally jumped to the surface and found, of course, not the miles and miles of dust, but we're talking a half an inch to an inch of dust, which at that particular point, it should have been, oh, hold on a minute, perhaps we were in error relative to our assumption that the Earth or that the moon is 4.5 or so billion years of age.
But it never crossed our minds, John.
Well, yeah, there's something, yeah, because we know the universe has to be. And how are we doing on time this morning, Dave?
We've got about 7 minutes.
Okay.
Six minutes.
Touch on another area here, too. Well, some people would say, well, God, when God created the universe and everything within it, he created it with age. Okay, and I most certainly agree with that. You know, the third day of the creation week with the trees that had seed in them, if you will, and that when Adam was formed from the dust of the ground and God breathed into his nostrils the breath of life and he became a living being or soul, that there was an appearance of age, yes. But if we're going to take that appearance of age and use that as argumentation that when God created the earth, he created with coal seams within it, with the enormous fossil beds that we find on a global scale within it, which would be, there are several problems. Number one, it'd be highly deceitful because we have God's word that we can use to figure things out from, and we would have death before sin. Just scripturally, you run into so many problems when a person would attempt to do that. So when God created everything, yes, it had an appearance of age, but not an appearance of age that would be misleading relative to his word and how we see things. You might, in your mind, think of you look into the stars and you look into the universe and the appearance of age. But from God's Bible, he will tell us, there's a passage in 1 Corinthians 15, that star differs from star. He created the variety of what we see of the celestial bodies with what appeared to be age, but we that believe in the Bible know that it doesn't appear to be 18 to 20 billion years because we have the Bible we can go to find out. And I believe know basically how old the universe and Earth are. Wow, that was a lot, wasn't it? take a breath.
Maybe you can comment on this, John. I read that the coal seams all have carbon-14 in them, and more than that, they all have the same amount of carbon-14. Well, if evolution was true and the age of the Earth was really billions of years old, there would be no carbon-14
yes.
in coal.
Absolutely. You take that half-life of 5,600 years, and you sit down with a calculator, and you figure that for 4.5 billion years. You know, and you're just going, there should be
publicly supported KJZ
to measure any amount of
carbon-14. KJZA Radio.
Because of that relatively
Williams,
short half-life.
Cottonwood Flagstaff,
again,
Arizona.
We don't
your National
hear
Public
any of this
Radio
stuff
and
in the
Community
textbooks.
Programs Connection.
No, it's been excluded
operating
from the textbooks, just as you don't read, if you will, of our founding fathers. years.
Underwriting support for the quality programs heard on KJAZZ is provided in part by Olson's Grain,
which our nation
a family-owned and operated
and that
business
the foundation
offering pet and livestock
was the inspiration
stables
of God's
and wild bird
and
seed supplies
upon
since
that foundation, the Constitution
stores
was written,
in Prescott,
the Bill of Rights, the Declaration
Dewey,
of Independence,
Valley, and
all
the
on the foundation
Valley.
Of the inspiration
Grain,
of the Bible.
Where good
well,
enough
John,
just
when you only get one side of the story, isn't that indoctrination instead of education?
Sure sounds like it to me, Dave.
Well, you know, that just kills me. That really bothers me.
Yeah, it's exactly that, brainwashing
KJAZZ
indoctrination,
studios in
which is really sad because it's not education.
Good afternoon.
And
the time now, 1 o'clock at KJAZZ.
Again,
talk
some
of the nation
major
continues.
Things in our nation in secular education that have really changed. If you ask a young person, someone that just came home from some Ivy League school, you ask them about moral absolutes. Or you ask them about how this nation was founded, the answer, for the most part, that you're going to get relative to the foundation of this nation and our Constitution and all of the things that were written from that will not be what you and I grew up with. You know, it has definitely changed. God has been taken out of our secular, thus the term secular education. You know, that you take God and Christianity out and where are you going to go for moral absolutes? You're going to go to the majority and whatever the majority believe to be true. There's a way which seemeth right unto a man, wherein whose end is death. Horrible paraphrase of that might be. There's a way which seemeth right unto a nation, wherein whose end might well be the destruction of that nation. Yes. And God has blessed this nation beyond measure. You know, and I look at the gray hair on you and the gray hair on me, and we have been blessed indescribably to grow up at the time that we've grown up and live our lives at this time. But we are in trouble. I'm not a doomsdayer, but our nation is in trouble as we've left the foundation of what the nation was founded upon.
That's right. In Psalms 11:3 says, if our foundations be destroyed, what will the righteous do?
That's it. And what we'll do is we'll live for Christ until he comes back. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's up to us Christians since, you know, the education system is indoctrinating our youth into the this idea of evolution in millions and billions of years. It's up to us to teach our kids the truth.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I make this quick comment, too. I really believe that the vast majority of teachers, whether it be elementary school or high school or college, are people that are sincere and dedicated and love what they do and really care and want to make a difference. I fervently believe that. But generally speaking, there's a scripture, Luke 6, verse 40, a student is not above his teacher, for when he is fully trained, he will be like him. And most people that teach, self included, we teach what we were taught and what we believe to be true. And if you're only taught one story, then what do you compare it with?
John, how can people reach you?
You can reach me through by email, jnay@creationscience.net. And I attend Prescott Valley Christian Church. I'd like to thank them this morning for their financial support and also the church in Palmer, Alaska, supporting the program.
That's jnay@creationscience.net, and you're welcome to send in your questions for Dr. John Nay, and he will respond to those in writing and or on the show. Until next week, we'll see you. Bye for now.